Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
All 29 of the teams are on my list.
Everyone's on the list.
I don't have a preferred destination. Like I said, I just want to win. You know, they ask me big market, small market. I don't care. You know, I want to win. You know, and obviously whatever team, you know, I get traded to, you know, play for it that year or whatever. If I get traded, I'm not sure. But just make the best of it. And then, you know, when free agency comes, see what happens. You know, I can't tell the future, but all 29 teams are on the list.
Middays on the Score.
I kind of don't exactly believe
not
you.
Every single one.
No.
All 29.
No. I think that somebody told him that it might be better business to open it up a little bit. That's Anthony Davis, obviously the center of much of what was going on over the weekend. Here to talk about that and more is a man you find on Twitter at Vince Goodwill, because he's Vincent Goodwill, Yahoo's senior NBA writer. What's happening, Vinny? How are you?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Wonderfully. The Eastern Conference is where the action is, I think, for the last couple months of this regular season. But does it, in coming out of that Eastern Conference, have teams done enough? Have the Sixers done enough to fight with the Warriors when we eventually get our NBA Finals that we're all waiting so patiently for?
I don't think there's a Kevin Durant that grows on a tree that can be the equalizer for any of these teams. I do think that people are spring anybody that comes out of the East a little bit short. And I'm sure you guys in Chicago can relate. And I know it was a long time ago, but go look at those Bulls championship runs. Whenever they were going for three straight, that was the toughest final. That was the toughest, you know, conference final series, because it takes a lot to keep going to that well time after time again. Now, I'm not saying one of these Eastern teams is going to beat Golden State, but I do think that Milwaukee and Toronto and Philly and Boston have done enough to basically put them on a level where they can say, all right, we're in game six against the Golden State Warriors. And whether we're down 3-2 or up 3-2, but that's where we are. And I think if you can say that, you know, that's where a series should be or could be, I think basically that's all you can ask for.
How interested should a team be in trying to pull a Paul George? Like, what would it take for a team's management group to be right now, look, we're going to make a move for AD. He's going to like it so much here that we are going to convince him. We're so confident in who we are and what we do. Because, look, ownership matters. Management matters. Do you think there's a team out there that is going to say, we're going to make him love us?
I don't know if there's a team out there, but I would say, considering how scared of a league or risk-averse this league, you know, has traditionally been, you know, I would be one of those guys, if I were in somebody's front office or management group, I would be saying, hey, why can't we make a move for this guy? And just to say, and look, I don't think he was lying when he said he's open to 29 other teams. He's talking about he's open to being traded to 29 other teams, not signing with 29 other teams. I think you have to be open for that. You're not going to block a trade one place or another. I think he's open-minded in that way of at least, you know, trying it out, seeing exactly how it's going to play, and then making his decision. If he's going to leave, he's going to leave anyway. The problem is, if you're one of these other teams, there's only so much you have in the way of assets. There's only so many decent players you have, so many draft picks you can offer, that Anthony Davis is going to be leaving the situation and walking right into the same exact, you know, locker room where there's players in there who aren't as talented as he is, or at least no one up to par that can say, I can at least get you to the second round of the NBA playoffs. Mm-hmm. That's why I think realistically there's only a handful of teams in Oklahoma City who's lucky, because they had competent front office and they had Russell Westbrook, who could basically scare Paul George into staying.
Talk of basketball with Vincent Goodwill. He is at Vince Goodwill on Twitter. He's Yahoo's senior NBA writer. What from the NBA All-Star game mattered most? What one thing that didn't have to do necessarily with the hooping actually mattered to you? Was it Kyrie watching the entire acceptance speech at the end of things, Dirk hitting a couple of three-pointers? Was there one thing, one storyline that really mattered to you, that spoke to you more than anything else?
I'm not a huge sap in that way, but I'm also not a huge conspiracy theorist that just says, you know, because Kyrie and KD were in the back hallway, you know, talking and spending a few moments together, that was some type of sign. So I'll honestly say the stuff with Dirk and Dwayne Wade was honestly kind of, I would say touching, because so many times when guys are considered to be washed, you know, we forget about them. We forget their contributions, and the game has changed in all these different ways, that those two guys are basically sort of pioneers in a certain way. I don't put much stock into Kyrie watching Kevin Durant's acceptance speech or Kevin Durant winning the second, you know, All-Star MVP and all these other type of things. I think we've known, you know, for a while now how great Kevin Durant is, or at least to some degree with Kyrie, what his options are. I didn't have to see anything else. But just to see, you know, the history being honored, there were times throughout the night where Bill Russell was honored, Magic Johnson was honored, and things like that. And I think the NBA does a really good job of embracing the guys who sort of paved the way. I'm just glad it did not take a long time for them to do that for Dwayne Wade and Dirk Nowitzki. They actually gave them their roses while they were still playing. And that doesn't, I know that doesn't mean anything in the future, but just saying, you know, just the way that the league comports itself and the way the league behaves relative to other sports leagues in that way, you know, I find that pretty remarkable.
We were looking at some of the television numbers recently that are down across the board. A lot of reasons for this. And as we discussed several weeks ago, it may simply be that LeBron James is not on TV early and that he's on TV too late now because of where he is, and it makes that big a difference. But the Bulls' numbers are way off because there have been eyes on them even when they had been bad, but that's not the case now. Do you think that there are any warning signs with some of these stars retiring, with a lot of future Hall of Famers closer to the end than the beginning, with all of the money that has been pumped into this? Do you think that there is Mark Cuban like to say that pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered? Is the NBA wary of some large scale business headwinds?
I don't know if they are, but I will say they would be wise to take a lesson from the NFL in that way, where ratings were high and the warning signs were around, but the money kept coming in, the revenue kept coming in, and they kind of just looked at it as carcass on the side of the road, because despite all of those things that were the evidence that was in their face, you know, the immediate dividends were still paying off. I think the NBA is a little more, I won't say paranoid, but they have to be a little more aware, because they're not that ingrained into the American consciousness the way that baseball used to be, the way that the NFL appears to be right now, even despite its issues. And you don't put that much stock into early season ratings, honestly, guys, because, and you can almost draw it to this, fewer people were watching the NFL last year, and those numbers came back to a relative order. Maybe they were watching more of the NBA. I would say I pay far more attention to the numbers from this point on to June. It's a playoff sport. They got to do, you know, the TNT promotion, 40 nights of basketball, 40 days, 40 nights, that type of thing. If those numbers are coming up short, then you got something. But because you talked about it earlier, Boston's going to be a premier team. Philadelphia, Toronto, it's maybe not Toronto because they don't register, but when you have the Northeast Corridor in the Nielsen rating, so to speak, when you have those teams being relevant, I think that means something. And if LeBron is in the playoffs, that doesn't hurt either.
Do you think that any of that, the flagging ratings early on, even though you said you expect things to pick back up, do you think any of that has to do with Adam Silver's foray into sports betting, or is that just a good business practice and good speculation of where markets are headed?
Well, I would say, if anything would be affected by that, the numbers would go up, because I think people are obsessed with the thought of gambling. I don't think people are watching less because they could go into gambling. I think people would wind up watching more. You know, I'm not a ratings expert. I don't know exactly the trends. I don't have a Nielsen box, you know, in my home. And it's funny that, you know, we give these pollsters basically so much country to some degree, and you know, determining how many people are watching relative to actually measuring how many people are really watching. So I do think that they're trying to be forward thinking as far as new streams of revenue. You know, if you look at some of the league pass things, they're trying to give the a la carte situation and everything else. Like, they're not resting on their laurels in that way. So I would say less than the NFL, there's not that organizational arrogance that the NFL has that the NBA shouldn't have. So I think they're always wary about some doom coming around the corner. But if you look at it, I don't think people are saying, I'm not watching the NBA anymore. And if they really are, they're lying.
We always like to look at a conference-less playoff system if we seed these teams 1 through 16 and not care if they are Eastern or Western to try to get the best matchups and avoid having the understood de facto finals in the semis or even the quarters, that there would be a really cool way to just say, hey, forget conferences, we'll keep the divisions for travel purposes. Yet, it's never going to happen because the teams that would be on the outside looking in, the owners that would be looking that year or for the next couple years, the teams that are down but still in the playoffs don't want to give up the revenue they would get from those playoff games. How could we get to a more fair, modern playoff system that produces the best possible playoffs and the most worthy possible champion?
Let me ask you the question. Is the playoffs meant to find a champion, or is the playoffs meant to get the best 16 teams in?
At the moment, they're simply meant to get the top eight of each conference in, and you figure that the final four will be the final four wherever they're coming from. I mean, they'll be the best, well, like the best four players will be on their teams, right?
Well, I will say this to you. And considering you're in Chicago and I'm a native Detroiter, and I say this as if we're just two guys speaking and not as if we're talking on the radio, two guys who are presumably sports fans. I don't want 16 teams. I don't want the randomness. I don't want March Madness in the NBA. I want rivalries. I want at least the possibility of it. I want teams. Look at some of the things. The first question you asked me was, did the teams in the Eastern Conference do enough to put themselves on par with the Golden State Warriors, right? If there were no conferences, then those teams wouldn't know who to prepare for because the system would be so random, you can't go out and get a Marc Gasol in preparation for playing a Joel Embiid.
Okay.
You couldn't go out and get a Tobias Harris to go out and play a Kawhi Leonard and other wings in the conference because you can't look at anything going on with eight teams or four teams or three teams or anything else because the system would just be random. And I think we're missing that. Because we're looking at, the ninth seed in the Western Conference is a decent 46-win team, and the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference, they don't deserve it at the end. They just won 41 games. To be honest, I don't give a damn. I want to see good playoffs from the second round on. It'd be great if the first round was cool, but I want to see the best eight teams. I want to see good competitive series, and I want to see the possibilities of rivalries forming and being sustainable for years to come, and not the randomness. That's just me. If you're campaigning for that, I understand it. But from my standpoint, I want familiarity breeding contempt for years to come.
I like that answer, I think it's a completely fair answer. I also would counter argue by saying I don't want my team making roster decisions and personnel decisions based on a potential second-round playoff matchup. I think every team in the league should be saying, how do I beat Golden State? How do we stop Giannis? Always look at the best team. Always be trying to win the championship and take on all comers.
Well, but to me, that's not realistic because if you go back to the modern NBA, the championships are basically held by four or five franchises. And with the league being as healthy as it is, people haven't had huge problems with Lakers, Celtics, Spurs, Bulls, Pistons, or whoever, hogging the championships. Every team, every franchise, as we know it, does not have the same level of expectations. Like if you go to the Washington Wizards franchise and you ask a general fan, what do you want for your team? And they'll say, honestly, I want
the
to get to
sweet
the second
release
round.
Of death will be the answer that you get from
Wizards. Yeah, right, right. Yeah. I'm just saying. But some franchises have higher expectations than the others. Every team does not have championship or bust. So when you're talking about success and you're talking about everybody having a chance, to me that's not realistic. This isn't the NFL. Like, I guess I accept the world in which I live in and that the NBA is completely different than other sports in that way, and that certain franchises are going to hold the championships, and that it's basically going to be between whoever those four contenders of that year or of that period are going to be. What teams make the best moves, not 2019 trying to catch Golden State. I'd rather it be three or four trying to catch Golden State, because if you go pick a year, let's say pick 1993. I could name every title contender from 1993 or any year on, and it's only 3 to 4 every year. Not necessarily the teams that make the conference finals, but just 3 to 4 championship caliber teams with championship expectations chasing the Bulls or chasing the Lakers or chasing whoever that really have a shot at winning. And I think the league is healthy that way. You don't need 29 great teams. You just need a handful of good ones and a few great ones that are separate.
Speaking of expectations and hogging championships, or at least championship appearances, LeBron and the Lakers have enough to get themselves into a spot to maybe make some noise in the Western Conference playoffs or not?
By noise, do we mean like appearance?
I guess you could define noise if you wanted to, but I want them to win a round. Let's say win a round.
Okay, here's the scenario in which I believe that they win a round.
Uh-huh.
Is there any other seed besides eighth?
Yeah.
Because if they get in the eighth seed and they're playing Golden State, they're going home early. Now, if they're a seventh seed, I will ascribe to the theory of LeBron James, you got to beat him 4 times in 2 weeks. And the only team that has actually done that over the past half decade has been the Spurs and Golden State. So I wouldn't be afraid if I were the Lakers going into Oklahoma City or going into Denver and Denver not having the relative experience, playoff experience, even though they have a lot of talent and a lot of good players. So, yeah, to me, that would be the ideal scenario for basketball fans, like a 2-7 Denver, L.A., or a 2-7 Oklahoma City and the Lakers. That's the way I see them winning the playoffs. As long as he's of relative health and the Lakers are not falling apart at the seams, I don't want to see that guy.
Vincent, this is always fun. We appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, no problem, guys. Take it easy.
That is Vince Goodwill, the NBA senior writer for Yahoo.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.